Hello and welcome to the season 10 finale of the Travel Diaries podcast. I'm your host, Holly Rubenstein, and here each week I'll be speaking to a very special guest about the seven chapters in their life's travel diaries. From their earliest childhood travel memory and the first place they fell in love with, to their hidden gem and what's at the top of their travel bucket list. We'll be uncovering their adventures around the world and the travel experiences and destinations that have shaped their lives. Thank you so much for joining me over the past few months. It has been genuinely one of my favorite ever seasons. As I've mentioned at the start of some of the episodes, I created this dream guest wish list when I first started the podcast, and this season has been a record for me in terms of ticking off people who I've been wanting to speak to for the last few years, and they've all surpassed my expectations. And I think, having heard from loads of you, that you know there have been some all-time favorite episodes for a lot of you in there as well, which has just been amazing to hear. I've been so happy. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to the whole season, do go back and start at the beginning. There have been a lot of great ones in there. And of course, I mean, there's also the last 10 seasons to uncover as well. So over 120 episodes now to discover. I'll be back next week actually with a bonus episode from the archives, just to tide you over to the spring when I'll be back with season 11. I'm hoping to do a little bit of traveling before I come back, fingers crossed. The next few weeks I just want to wind down a bit. You might have noticed that there was no episode last week. We have had a litany of nursery bugs. I'm sure a lot of you parents can relate to this. It has been full on, non-stop. And of course, you know, what you don't necessarily think about is that we as parents also catch these bugs. So yeah, gonna need a few weeks, I think, just to recover. And then come the new year, I'll be back getting season 11 together for you. And of course, I can't wait. Who would you like to hear from? You must send me a message and let me know. Before we get started with our guest today, I have been waiting to talk to you actually about a hotel called Borgo Ignazia in Puglia, which I visited a couple of months ago now. And as we actually talk about it on today's episode, it felt like the perfect opportunity to share a little bit more about it. It's a very special spot nestled amidst the sun-kissed landscapes of Puglia in the heel of Italy, a place where olive groves stretch out as far as the eye can see and the Borgo emerges like a timeless masterpiece. I will genuinely never forget my stay there because it's where I had one of my most memorable travel experiences. The hotel is extremely unusual in that it's like a historic village. It has a clock tower and a piazza and winding cobblestone paths that meander through the property, leading to stone cottages and villas. And in its heart is this big market square where every weekend they put on a festa, a huge party. And it's this that was so unforgettable. Each weekend is different, but when we were there, it was turning autumn and really long wooden tables were covered in twinkling candles and vases filled with autumn leaves. And there was a big local band playing. Countless food stands lined the square, steaming with delicious local treats. I mean, you know, dozens and dozens of food stands. And it was really this ultimate immersive experience to get a taste of what Puglia is all about. And Borgo Ignazia just put it on so beautifully. It was basically like my dream wedding. And it's no wonder that, you know, Justin Timberlake and Jessica Biel famously chose it as their wedding venue. If you do decide to visit, there are a huge array of rooms to choose from to suit different budgets and group sizes. There are romantic rooms in La Corte, some with balconies, others with courtyard gardens or terraces that overlook the incredible golf course or the Borgo down to the sea. Families, I'd recommend maybe one of the casette, the stone cottages in the Borgo, which have little kitchenettes and walls strung with herbs and lavender posies. And for a splurge or a big family, there are full-size villas with many bedrooms and their own private pool set in gardens of bougainvillea. We visited as a family. Our daughter was 10 months at the time, and the hotel was so welcoming of families. It, you know, had all the gear, had a fantastic kids club, playground, a petting farm with all the cutest little animals, and even a specific kids' restaurant, but also with a huge sparkling adults-only pool, many bars, a show-stopping spa, a Michelin-star restaurant. It equally caters to those traveling without children. I would say that it's one of those special hotels that mean that you can coexist. And it is one of the destinations chosen as a favorite by my guest today. You might know her as the formidable judge on MasterChef The Professionals, or maybe you followed her globe-trotting escapades on the BBC's Amazing Hotels Life Beyond the Lobby. Or maybe you've even been lucky enough to eat in her London restaurant, Mir. She is one of the best known and highly renowned female chefs in the UK. It is, of course, Monica Galletti. Now, Monica is another one of those guests that I dreamed about speaking to since I started the podcast. I was desperate to ask her about what her childhood was like growing up on a tiny island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And then what it was like when she moved from there as a child to New Zealand, where suddenly it's cold and it's another language that she didn't speak. I was so excited to ask her about her love of food and how that led her to London to work alongside Michel Roux Jr. at his legendary Michelin star restaurant Le Gavroche. The intense kitchen there became the crucible where Monica honed her skills, eventually rising to become the restaurant's first female sous chef. And her experience there would eventually serve as the foundation to open her restaurant in Fitzrovia in London, Mir. Or Mary. I think that there are kind of two pronunciations. After a few technical issues, I was so pleased Monica was able to squeeze this interview into her jam-packed schedule. She just got off a plane and got home. So this was recorded remotely last week, and I was coming to her from Clifton, as we talk about at the start of the episode, a legendary British hotel that I was invited to, which was a real treat. So from Samoa to Sri Lanka, Ireland to Italy, and much, much more. Let's get started. Monica Galletti, welcome to the Travel Diaries podcast. It is so nice to see you today. Thank you so much for being here. How are you?
I'm good, Holly. Nice to see you.
And you've just landed back in the UK?
I have. I've been away filming the new series of hotels.
Oh my gosh, the new series has already got started.
Yeah.
Wow. I guess it just must take so much time. Where's left? You've been to every corner of the globe with that show.
No, still lots more to see, lots more to do. So it's only the first of the series that we've started. Still got another 7 to go yet. Yeah.
Wow. And can you reveal anything about it at this stage?
I think just lots of exciting destinations. I've just been in Rome. We're doing a lot more across Asia, from what I've seen, which is really exciting and really looking forward to. Are you home?
Here? I'm actually at Clifton.
Clifton Manor.
Yeah, it was their Christmas party last night and they invited me. So I'm speaking to you from a suite at Clifton.
Yes, of all you places. Girl. I love it. I love that. It's not just like Clifton, you know.
Just casual.
Like normal Wednesday morning, that's where I am. I love it.
So we start off, Monica, at chapter one, the 7 chapters of your life's travel diaries. We go right back to the very beginning to start off with. And that is normally your earliest childhood travel memory. But because you had what I consider to be such an unusual childhood, growing up in a place that I don't know so much about, I wondered if we could start off by chatting a bit about your childhood in Samoa, because it's not every day I get the opportunity to speak to somebody who has had that kind of childhood in the South Pacific. What was life like there?
It's a simple life, as simple as you could imagine, you know, running around, playing barefoot, the wider family supporting everyone. It's all about family, you know. I didn't know cold until I left New Zealand. I left Samoa. you know, it was all about eating, you know, fresh tropical fruit, running around with all your cousins and what have you. And I just always remember having lots of family around.
Oh, that's so nice. I mean, when you do a Google image search of Samoa, actually, how what is the correct way to pronounce Samoa?
Firstly? Samoa.
Samoa.
Yeah, Samoa. Okay. Yeah.
So when you do a Google image search, really, it looks like
paradise.
An untouched, an Paradise, exactly. An untouched paradise.
Yeah.
And do you go back now? Because it's probably kind of one of the furthest places away from the UK.
It can't be any further. I mean, I thought New Zealand was far, but it's like another 6 hours, 7 hours from New Zealand. I'm back there in August next year, which I'm super excited about. Yeah, long overdue.
So actually, how long does it take you to get there?
Well, you don't do it in one go. You know, I will probably have a stopover, see family either in Australia or New Zealand, and then head over there.
Mm. And what will the trip back for you, you know, involve?
Well, I'm being made ambassador of Samoa. So that's what the trip is about, you know, is to go back and touch base and see everyone and take my family back. It's been a while since we've been there together and really sort of reintroduce my daughter to her culture as well.
What is it that you want to really teach her about your culture?
There's so much about Ainga, about family, the food. There's nothing like that here in the UK. We don't have family in the UK. There is no real Samoa network here. So, you know, you can't compare it just to be around people that speak Samoan and have the food and enjoy that family time. And, of course, my father is there. Is so it'd be nice to catch up with him, yeah.
Oh, that will be – well, congratulations. Being an ambassador must mean – I imagine it is a very special – accolade to have.
Oh, it's an honor to be able to do that for Samoa. Yeah.
And what would you say to a first time visitor to do if they haven't been there before? Where to stay? What to do? How would you encourage them to get the flavor of what you think would be the best flavor for a first timer's experience there?
There's so much to do, but I think visiting Savai'i, which is the second part of Samoa, the little island. It's a bit more rural compared to the main islands in Apia, although, you know, getting immersed in the culture and family life there is second to none. They're so inviting and warm, and unlike someone that's, let's say, what was someone hospitality like, they're not going to spear you to the wall.
Are there any hotels there that you recommend that you've stayed in?
There's loads of hotels, a lot of family-owned hotels. I think Aggie Grace is the most popular one. But they have little boutique hotels everywhere, which I think is just quite special.
Mm. So, Veronica, chapter two is the first place that you fell in love with. What would that be?
The first place I fell in love with, possibly Vanuatu. Was I mean, separate from Samoa, was just so tranquil, and I visited that island on my own, and it was where I learned to dive.
So tell me about the diving experience there. What it was like, what it looked like, what you saw.
Do you dive?
Do you know what? No, I've only ever been snorkeling. Yeah.
Okay. Well, take snorkeling up to 100. For me, it's the most beautiful thing because no one can contact you. It's just you and, you know, the beautiful sea life that you get to just immerse yourself in for that short amount of time. It's the most beautiful experience. And that's why Vanuatu has always been very special to me.
I guess it's a kind of, like you say, almost like a mindful exercise, isn't it? Because you're completely disconnected and there's nothing more therapeutic than being immersed in nature.
Absolutely. And it's down to your breathing and sort of, you know, controlling your breathing and being calm, just forgetting everything and being in that moment. I think very few experiences in life gets you to cut off fully and fully immersed in what you're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what about cooking? I mean, because a lot of chefs that I've interviewed along the years have said that almost the process of perfecting what you're doing and the finer details are quite mindful in their focus. Do you find that?
Absolutely. But then you're also under pressure to recreate those dishes. You know, and if you're in the heat of a service, you know, it's just to concentrate on getting the team through. I'm not the sort of chef who's going to get hung up on putting 10 different leaves on one dish while the customer is waiting. You know, it's creating a dish and being a part of that is fundamental to what you do. That's the fun side. And then you've got the reality of actually putting that dish out, you know, 30, 40 times, all, you know, one after the other and getting it right every time.
So while it's kind of mindful, it's not exactly relaxing. necessarily.
I would say, you know, you're in a service. There's times when it's relaxing, and that's when you're creating. In the service, it's all about the adrenaline and getting through the service with the team.
So going back to Vanuatu, when was the first time that you went there? And what were your first impressions of the island?
2000, I was there. So I was very inquisitive, and then finding myself in another Pacific island, you know, speaking a completely different language to Samoa. But the culture is very similar. Also, you know, just so tranquil and beautiful. People are just so heartwarming. People are just so warm and inviting, and you just immerse yourself, even though I was staying in a hotel with the local people. You know, I loved it.
Mm. And so you moved to Wellington in New Zealand when you were how old?
We left Samoa, it was about eight or nine.
And I've read that you said that, you know, it wasn't an easy adjustment.
No, yeah. We moved from Samoa to New Zealand. I couldn't speak English. So, of course, having to adjust to a whole new country, you know, and pick up the lingo. But luckily, my brothers were there before us, so they helped sort of form the way into sort of finding our feet.
How do you look back on that time when you left Samoa? What were your feelings?
Well, it seemed very normal at the time. You know, your parents say this is what's happening and you sort of go along with it. Maybe a bit of confusion to go with it. I remember missing the warmth of Samoa and you know, just the smells of the island and having to readjust to a different life. But having my siblings there, you just adjusted really well.
And when did you first fall in love with cooking?
It's part of our culture. I've always been in the kitchen. You know, we grew up in the kitchen. It's where the gossip happens. It's where all the fun happens. When family comes over, it's where everyone hangs out. You know, and also being the eldest girl, I was responsible for learning to support the family and learning how to cook from a very young age. So it's something that I've always done. And then while studying my diploma in hospitality and discovering that, you know, the actual techniques on how to chop, for example, and making stocks and butchery and all of that more technical side, that's when I realized this is something that I truly wanted to do forever.
And when you were living in New Zealand and you'd been obviously immersed for that first stage of your life in the Samoan food culture, how would you contrast that then with your experience of New Zealander food and like how they both have in their way influenced your culinary style now?
There's a huge Pacific Island heritage in New Zealand, so you still had the same sort of food you had in the islands, and that was the wonderful part of it. You know, but then you know, discovering new things like ice cream. You know, I found I still don't have a very sweet tooth, because for me, you know, sweet things were what I associated with fresh fruit when I was younger. But yeah, I think just, you know, different flavors and smells of food in New Zealand was a delight to discover. And that just growing up there, you know, is part of things that you take away with you.
Is there a Samoan signature dish, like the ultimate kind of dish that would give you a taste of what you grew up loving and eating?
There are loads, but I think my favorite thing is a oka, which is like a seafood ceviche, Pacific Island ceviche. But we make ours and cure it in coconut milk and citrus and all that. So that's definitely something that I love having and love it so much. It's on my menu now at the restaurant, though a little bit chef-y'd up.
I think I got to try that when I came for dinner a couple of weeks ago. The ceviche, I think, was on the menu and it was absolutely delicious. I mean, it must be so exciting to draw on your such an international upbringing to, and then bringing that into a menu in London.
Yeah, but it's also trying to get your team who have no association of Pacific Island to understand what you're trying to put together. You know, so when you communicate, for example, similar to a ceviche, I've got a chef in my kitchen who's from Peru who totally gets it. And thankfully, Sven, who's my head chef, you know, is so curious about the Pacific Island culture that he's really keen to learn more about it. So I've had a lot of fun, you know, curating the menus with Sven since he's joined, and so much so that I'm hoping to send him to Samoa in the new year to really get him to understand what it is that we do.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Today's episode is supported by Airbnb, and what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of the Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like last autumn when we took the family to Puglia, we put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb superhost. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden. And my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb.
Well, chapter 3 is the place where you learn the most about yourself.
I would have to say that here in London, when I moved to London, leaving my family, friends, everyone behind, and having to really be self-sufficient and be independent completely, you know, back in, even though I'd moved out home and stuff in New Zealand, you could always go home and, you know, raid your mum and dad's fridge if you needed to. there's no such thing here, you know. So I think living in London really meant growing up quickly.
Yeah. And you came and you know, landed this incredible job at Le Gavroche with Michel Roux Jr. I mean, as a young chef, was that everything that you dreamed of?
And more. It's the most difficult time I had as a chef, learning, you know, but it was also the time that I realized that I wanted nothing more than to be the best that I could, you know. So, yeah, it was a good, great time. Made some great friends and still have to this day.
Michelle, of course, was a former guest on the podcast here and a much loved guest. A lot of people are watching TV shows at the moment that depict restaurant life. I don't know if you're watching any of them. You know, we've got The Bear, Boiling Point. You haven't watched either of them?
No.
No, you probably see it.
Why would I watch it? I live it. Why do I watch something? It's what I do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Boiling Point, the name, the title kind of gives it away, really, and that it is a pretty fraught, frenetic energy. What was it like in the kitchen with Michelle?
You have those moments, but these shows just pick on the worst parts of the industry, which kind of find annoying. There's so much more to being in a kitchen team than, you know, just the temper tantrums that, you know, they go off and make these series about, you know, maybe they should focus on the positives of when you create something together as a team and getting through a service together and supporting those around you. What don't they talk about the sustainability of the amazing ingredients that they work with and the farmers and the growers that put this together with you? Yes, but it's all about, you know, chefs throwing pans across the kitchen. Mm. Can you tell I'm not a fan of these shows?
How are you feeling about Le Gavroche closing its doors?
It's time. If Michelle says it's time, and I respect and love him for that. You know, I look forward to going and seeing them before that happens. So.
Yeah. It's an end of a chapter in the culinary world of London, really, isn't it?
I absolutely think so. I think it's a huge loss to the next generation who will never get that training. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I hope that, you know, there'll be other places out there that can offer that training that I was very lucky and very fortunate, as well as many other chefs were able to get. Mm.
Well, would some of them come and train with you?
Well, I have a great team. Yeah. I have a great team.
Yeah, exactly. Well, chapter four, Monica, is the big one, your all-time favourite destination. So hard to pick, but what comes to mind?
It has to be Samoa for me. I grew up in New Zealand. I've lived in London longer than I have lived in New Zealand now, coming to 25 years. And yet, deep in my bones, in my blood, Samoa is home for me. You know, I miss it so much. I can play a Samoan song that my parents used to play, and it takes me there, you know. So for me, that is always my ultimate destination.
Do you think you'd ever go back and live there?
I would love to, yeah, yeah. Away from all the stress and buzz of city life once it's completely out of my system.
Yeah. And I imagine, I mean, what does your daughter think of it? Would she like to live there?
She loves it. I don't know. I mean, she's only 17. She's got life to go and all of that, but she absolutely loves it there. She's excited to go back.
Wonderful. And so the BBC approached you when you were obviously, you know, chefing to host amazing hotels, Life Beyond the Lobby. And as someone who obviously loves travel, this must have been a dream gig, right?
Hell yeah. I'm like, don't have to ask me twice. And then actually the timing just happened really well. I was in the middle of opening the restaurant and it got delayed by 3 months. And quite literally the next week, the BBC came to me with the amazing hotels. And that was the only way I could, you know, commit to it. If that delay hadn't happened, I think I would have had to pass on it. So completely over the moon.
And for people who haven't watched it, can you just briefly explain the premise?
It's pretty much in the title, Amazing Hotel Around the World, you know, Life Beyond the Lobby. And it's not just, you know, I spend this much in my room and look how fantastic it is. It's very much about the stories behind that, the people that run it, how did it come about, you know, whether it be a family hotel or environmental. You know, and you cover the issues from, you know, climate change and how that's affected it over the years, depending where we are, you know, to cultures and of course, cultures that have never had tourism before. How does that affect the local people, the food in these countries, you know, and I get to learn all about. And that's what I love about traveling, you know, the discovery of other cultures and fantastic people and the food that they have.
Yeah. I mean, when you reflect on the hotels that you've been in so far on the show and the food, is there one that stands out in particular?
Oh, I'd have to say so far, Sri Lanka, definitely. And of course, anytime we're in Italy.
Yeah.
you know, I think Italy is definitely up there as one of my top European countries. I do love Italy with a passion.
I just got back actually from Borgo Nazia myself.
Oh yeah.
Having watched your episode probably about a week before I flew out. So it got me very much in the spirit of visiting. And
the food is amazing, isn't it?
The food was incredible. And it was just such an unreal setup, wasn't it?
Yeah, you're sort of going to get your head around it, don't you? Like, how is this real but not?
Yeah,
you
know? Because for my listeners who don't know about it, it feels like a very historic village, but in fact, it was only built, you know, 20 or so years ago, was it? Yeah, but it's been made to feel as though it is kind of steeped in history, and like Monica's saying, like the food there is this wonderful southern Italian Puglian cuisine, which is phenomenal. Very family friendly hotel, isn't it?
Yeah.
I imagine a lot of people say to you, well, I saw this hotel on the series and now I've saved up and I'm going to go and visit it.
And it's really sweet, you know, people come to the restaurant and say, oh, you know, we saw that, so we went for our honeymoon.
And
some people who say they try and pick one from every series that they save up to go to, you know, and they've met some of the people that we filmed with.
Yeah.
I had someone send a message that they went to St. Lucia and met the lovely gentleman that did the sugarcane plantation tour and tells the whole history of slavery and everything that happened there. And they went and did that with him, you know. So there's just so much enriching experiences you get to have. And, of course, those people that we meet actually become the little stars of it. And
yeah.
People go and associate them with the whole experience, you know. They want to meet those people, yeah. So that's a great sign.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so like not only are the hotel people getting to discover the hotels, they're getting to associate the people, because in hospitality, it's not just the hotel. It's not just the people within the hotel. Like it branches out and out and out, doesn't it? And I imagine that you experience this all the time. It's, you know, hospitality affects a broader community always. And that's another whole realm within the program.
Absolutely, you know, the whole network that come together to create the soul of that hotel. Otherwise, I really believe it's just an empty building.
So do you have any idea how many hotels you've visited on it so far?
I think, what are we, 6 years now? So 6, 12, 18. We're thinking around 34, 35.
That's amazing number. And they are literally dotted all over the world. So as we're in the all-time favorite category, what was the most amazing of all? Can you pick one?
Not just one. That's impossible. And certain hotels for me are amazing for different reasons than other people would say. You know, in Ireland, for example, is a hotel where I just found the warmth of the Irish people, just really brought so much soul and love to that hotel. You know, I would go there tomorrow.
Mm. Was that Ashford Castle?
It was.
Yeah.
You know, Borgo Ignazio, for example, in Puglia, you know, just the culture that they managed to immerse into this brand new hotel and the lovely team behind it. And then you have, you know, Marlon Brando's in French Polynesia, which is so high end. Cater for, I don't know, triple A celebrities, but never mind that. But, you know, what they do there is protect the marine life. You can't eat or fish anything in that lagoon that surrounds the island. You know, they managed to use the currents of the ocean to cool the rooms, you know. So things like that, it blow my mind.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, yeah, you know, things like that, honestly. And then in Sri Lanka, you know, where you've got this amazing family who are using the old plantations to get people to experience a part of Sri Lanka that people wouldn't normally bother about because it's so far up north, you know, but it's so beautiful, and the culture, the food, yeah, you know. So I'd probably have to say I have a top 5 or 10 as opposed to just one. Very unfair.
And Joali also in the Maldives. That looked like an incredible property.
Stunning, isn't it? But, you know, out in the Maldives, there's such huge competition out there to have a hotel. I think people just think, oh, you know, by the sea, you know, on the beach and away. But, you know, to create something like they did, you know, respecting or the natural habitat as much as possible, and instead of like cutting down trees, they let them stay bent and crooked and built around that instead. Love the fact that they have in the Maldives, you know, the highest percentage of women employed in hospitality.
Yeah.
You know, so there's so much more to it than, yes, you get the luxury side of the hotel, but it's all those stories that I find is just so wonderful.
And has it ever crossed your mind, having, you know, had such an insider look at all these hotels, would you ever open one yourself?
No, I wouldn't. Maybe in Samoa, you know. I think I'd like to do it in Samoa. let me small a boutique hotel in Samoa many, many, many moons from now.
Okay, well, you heard it here first. keep an eye out. if you were creating your dream hotel, what would be like the three key pillars that you think you would want to instill in what you put out there?
For me, the three key things is respecting the food culture wherever that hotel is, say in Samoa. You know, sustainable to the location for me is huge, and employment of the locals is also very key. Mm.
And those are the kind of key pillars that I feel are really, you know, hopefully being embraced by hospitality as a whole that we're seeing on the show as well.
I'd like to think so. Yeah. I really like to think so. You know, sustainable tourism is what everyone wants. You know, we all love to travel and to learn about other cultures, but it has to be sustainable, you know, and done in a way that, you know, we try and protect the planet as much as possible. You'd hate to think, you know, the only way to travel in the future is one of those virtual goggle things.
Oh my God.
Yeah. You know, how depressing would that be, you know? I like to think that sharing the knowledge and making all that, you know, a harmonious thing so that everyone can benefit is the way forward.
Yeah, totally. And I imagine as an islander, you must feel that even more acutely.
Hugely, you know, hugely. And, you know, small island like Samoa depends heavily on tourism to survive, you know, and to support, you know, the whole island basically. And I think lots of other places, you know, really saw that, you know, during the pandemic, how vital it is. So I think, you know, it'd be mad not to sort of support each other in a way that, you know, supports things to make it possible sustainably and you know, with the environment in mind. Mm. Yeah. Mm.
So moving on to chapter five, that is your hidden gem, a place that you love that maybe my listeners wouldn't know so much about.
I really think Vanuatu is that hidden gem, never mind Samoa. And it's just so far, again, you know, out there. It's just, I think second to Samoa, it would have to be Vanuatu. I think Croatia is one that I recently came across during the hotel series, and I never wanted to share that with the world. I thought it was so beautiful, and thinking, how did I not know about this before?
Yeah, when it's so accessible from the UK.
So accessible, and I think more and more people are discovering it. So I think Croatia.
How much downtime do you get, like when you're making these epic journeys to get to said hotel? Do you get any time to just chill out?
Very rarely. You might get a morning off. Wow. Or an afternoon. Yeah. So people think you're just chilling out by the pool and that, but no, they like to keep us busy.
So it's a dream gig, but it's not like a dream. It's not like you're going on dream holidays.
I mean, look, you're fortunate. You get to stay in an amazing hotel, but you're not actually, you know, on holiday. You're there to work and discover. And so, you know, it's amazing work. You get to go and spend time, I don't know, with foragers or people from the hotel that make the wine, for example, or, you know, you have the more, you know, obvious things like housekeeping. You know, make, there are only so many beds one would like to make. You know, so it's all that, but you just, you know, get to learn so much about the hotel, and it's a great gig to be able to do.
Yeah. And so you've lived in London for, you know, as you said, longer than you lived in New Zealand now, and being, you know, in so deeply embedded in the food scene here, can you share any hidden gem restaurant recommendations, like some places that you love to visit that, you know, aren't kind of like on the Le Gavroche level type?
You know, I don't get to eat out as much as I used to. It's just so busy. And it's when I do eat out, I like to try and get somewhere I know what I'm going to have, and it's great. I mean, I love going to Jaishiki, for example. I love seafood. You know, so Jaishiki for me has been there for years and years. It's a great establishment, you know, and has a great reputation. And so for a seafood lover, that is my go-to. My dearest friend, or one of my closest friends, has for me in in my eyes, the best Spanish restaurant, and that's Nieves. She has Sabor. But she's always busy. So, yeah, good luck trying to get in there.
And so how are you finding the new series of MasterChef? I mean, it's kind of coming up to a climax now. Yeah, what are your reflections on the crop, this series on the professionals?
So wonderful, the selection of chefs we got this year. We had so many women enter as well.
That's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good to see. You know, and it's coming down to the cream of the crop at the moment. It's exciting, and I always love to hear who's their favorite, who are they gunning for. And it was just a real joy to be back with the crew, which are like a MasterChef a family, you know. No, it's been great.
So our penultimate chapter, Monica, is chapter 6, your worst travel experience or the place that you would never go back to.
I can't say, you know, it's been so bad you would say you would never go to, and it has to be really bad for something like that to happen. I mean, one of the worst things that happened, but I wouldn't say it would put me off for totally going back there, but I wouldn't rush back there, is in Scotland, where I got attacked by midges. You know, and I never come across these nightmare things before. And I remember we were up there in the autumn, and they're like, oh, you're so lucky, you've just missed the midges season. And I was like, oh, okay. And lo and behold, we're out there filming, and they were like dive bombing my head. There was no one else but me. It was like, and honestly, I was so scared to go out the whole week. And then slowly, as we were filming, you know, you could start seeing these spots on the show.
The makeup artist is having to come in.
I wish I had a makeup artist. But honestly, it's like walking around like that cartoon with a zzz around my head, and no one else had it. You know, so that was the only thing, and it had nothing to do, you know, with where we were staying or filming at the time. Otherwise, I can't say there's been something so bad and horrific that I would say, okay, that's it, I'm never coming back there. So thanks to the midges, that's one season I'll try and avoid.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's actually a very good travel tip for our listeners, because while Scotland is one of the most mentioned destinations on the podcast, and it is, of course, so beloved, you do have to check the mid-season and the mid-forecast, because otherwise you're going to have to be walking around with a net over your head or just staying inside.
Yeah, I honestly had no idea, and it's so beautiful, Scotland. So be prepared. I think you need one of, you know, in Australia where they wear those cork hats. That's probably what those were created for as well. No one knew. For me, anyway, it's just like a net. Next time I'll just go out, you know, in a suit that you wear when you're going to check the honey.
Yeah, it's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah. Oh, well, thank you so much, Monica. We are on to your final chapter, chapter 7. And that is the destination that is at the top of your travel bucket list. Where is left for you to discover that you haven't yet been?
I want to go to Japan. Honestly, we were planning to go with the family, my husband and daughter. We all wanted to go, and then the pandemic hit, and we kept saying, yeah, once it's done, we're going to go. And hello, we're just ending up so busy, we still haven't done it. So for us, I think Japan is top of the list.
And is that because of the food in particular?
Yes, food culture. You know, my husband loves whiskey, so do I, actually, you know, and yeah. It just looks so beautiful. My cousin lived there for 5 years, and I kept seeing his photos, you know, when the blossoms were out as well. And it's just stunning, beautiful people. So definitely Japan is top of the list.
Brilliant. Well, I hope you make it there soon, Monica.
Me too. What have you been?
No. And do you know, it's the most mentioned bucket list destination on the podcast. 120 episodes in. Japan. If it's not the top, if it's not top of the bucket list, it's the all-time favorite destination, by far the most mentioned destination. So
I love that.
And chefs in particular, they just go mad for it, don't they?
Yeah, we do. We're all quite desperate to get there. We'll be like pushing each other out the line in the airport.
Yeah, bumping into each other in the little alleyways there where they have those tiny, amazing restaurants. Oh, well, thank you so much, Monica. Those were your travel diaries. It's been a real pleasure chatting to you.
Thank you, Holly. And I'm really glad we managed to get it done. Third time lucky.
Thank you. Oh, a huge thank you to Monica Galletti. Do check out her fantastic restaurant, Mir, for a taste of what we've been talking about today. And thank you to the magnificent Joali Resort in the Maldives, one of Monica's amazing hotels, who helped to make this interview happen. And so that is a wrap for season 10. Thank you again for tuning in. I hope that you're all starting to feel festive. I put together a little Travel Diaries Christmas gift guide over on my Instagram at Holly Rubenstein. So do check that out. A labor of love with lots of my favorite brands that I think you're going to love. And I'll be back next week with a bonus episode from the archives and then back with a whole new season in the spring. So who would you like to hear from? Who are your dream guests? You know, I always try to make it happen if you ask. So remember, you can get in touch with me on Instagram. And I'm also on Threads and TikTok. Maybe my New Year's resolution will be to actually use those a bit more. It should be, actually. That will be my New Year's resolution. But certainly, I'm always happy to chat. And remember, all the destinations mentioned by my guests are included in the episode show notes here on your podcast app and on my website, thetraveldiariespodcast.com. Loads of love, everyone. Thanks again for your support. Happy holidays, and I'll speak to you soon. Today's episode is supported by Airbnb, and what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of the Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like last autumn when we took the family to Puglia, we put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb superhost. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden, and my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom, and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.